the name of the values that keep you alive, do not let your vision of man be distorted by the ugly, the cowardly, the mindless, and those who have never achieved his title. Do not lose your knowledge that man's proper estate is an upright posture, an intransigent mind, and a step that travels unlimited roads. Do not let your fire go out, sparked by replacing the spark in the hope the swamps of the approximate are not quite, the not yet, the not at all. The world you desired can be won. It exists. It is real. It is possible. It's yours.
Hello and welcome back to the Crypto Economy Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Kalabian, and I'm here with Asias Tong. He's our CFO and one of our co-founders. Asias, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Mark, for having me.
Yeah, anytime. We'll just jump right in, and I think one of the best things we can do is maybe give people a little background on how you maybe got into crypto. Maybe you could talk a little bit about the exchange that you and Will built and what you've been doing since then.
Yeah, I got into crypto pretty early on. It was in 2012. So, and I basically started with mining first because back then electricity was free in the dorms, you know, and it was definitely worth mining at a time too. So it paid the rent, everything. And then I got into the exchange stuff with Will in 2014 with Crypto Exchange Inc. And from there, it's been a pretty wild ride, but it's been better than ever right now.
Yeah, absolutely. So as far as the exchange and a little bit afterwards, so after you got shut down, you started your blog on Quora. So what was your sort of inspiration for starting that blog, and how have you kept up with it and engaged with people within the community?
I think building a community is very important, and that's where you always start. And Quora had a lot of traffic coming in, not just in terms of numbers, but also quality. So that's where I started in, because it would be the most visible way to express a lot of concepts regarding cryptocurrency or the blockchain technology. And I've met a lot of people there. It's also helped me a lot in terms of my consultant gig, I guess. I guess that's more accurate. I've met some really awesome people, a lot of people, different people in the industry. You get a lot more in terms of how the market is and what different players are doing in different realms. I was really, really fortunate to be able to consult for this guy that was in a hedge fund, and he also knew some people that were doing this. It was like a blockchain ETF, so that they finally got publicly listed. So that was it was interesting to figure out like all these people that were just really entrenched in finance, but decide they wanted to just jump the gun and into crypto. So, yeah, it's really fun working with these type of people.
Yeah, exactly. I think there are a lot of people in that industry who wanted to get into it, but they really didn't have much of a background in the tech side, and vice versa. A lot of the guys on the tech side didn't have much experience with the financial. Have you noticed a lot of bad information out there, and have you been? You know, I read your blog very religiously, and everything you put on there has been, you know, spot on as far as predictions, and all of your analysis is great. I'm sure you've noticed there's a lot of bad stuff out there as far as what other people are saying. Do you have any thoughts on that?
There's a lot of news out there, and these days they don't really spend too much in terms of fact checking. So the it's really what sells the ads, and often that's what's the most sensational aspect of it. In terms of just even one of the most reputable news sources, Bloomberg, they actually pay their reporters in terms of their bonuses for what moves the markets the most. So it's not necessarily the most accurate. But it's not necessarily bad in per se, because there's some news that you can verify. You have to really, really understand the industry and really understand the technology, really understand a lot of the global trends and macros to figure out what's real, what's not, or what's possibly real. There's a lot of layers to it. So it's not very clear cut to say, this is definitely wrong or this is definitely right, because there's just not, we don't really know every single detail out there. But it's good, you can get a bird's eye view and kind of make some guesses, really educated guesses, and so far I've been right so far.
Yeah. Where do you typically get your information, and how do you delve into the research? What do you look for?
Well, I look for, in my mind, I have a mental model of how things work. I also try to figure out who in terms of crypto. I know a lot of people in some private groups, especially developers or security lawyers that I've worked with the SEC. There's a lot of people in the industry in different aspects, and you definitely want to be connected to those people and know what's going on in terms of security law or any tech developments. And once you know enough about that and observe what's going on, then you can have a better understanding and ultimately have a better guess at what's gonna happen.
So as far as the laws and regulations, is there anything that's come out recently that you think people should be worried about, or things that you've noticed that you think, you know, should be brought to people's attention?
It really depends on what you're asking. I'd say just in general, it seems like there's more focus on a lot of the asset-backed ICOs. Some of them are registering with the SEC directly. There's also some, there's a lot less ICOs in terms of just the really speculative ones with crazy ideas. So I guess it's kind of more, there's a lot less pure speculation going on. But I mean, it's still a lot of speculation in the first place. Then I feel like there's a lot of the governments already are aware of the situation more than before. Although they still have some reservations, they still have a lot of, they're not fully informed on every single part of aspect, because it does take a bit of a learning curve in terms of understanding technology and where it goes. So I don't expect mass adoption for Bitcoin like in this year, but I'd say it's definitely possible. You know, it really depends on what you're asking, but I'd say generally speaking, that's the general direction.
Would you go so far as to agree with someone like Jack Dorsey, who says that crypto Bitcoin more specifically could become a one world currency in, you know, the next 10 years?
It's next 10 years is pretty hard to predict. I'd say it's definitely possible, and Bitcoin has the best network effects. It also has a lot of interconnectedness in terms of just the cryptocurrency market and also the finance markets. You've got these Bitcoin futures and the CME. You've got the CBOE, and also NASDAQ is about to release their stuff. Pretty much all the apps like Square, all of these are using Bitcoin specifically, and most of the crypto exchanges use Bitcoin exclusively. So I'd say it's probably the most likely so far, but it's really hard to say if a new coin will come out and dethrone Bitcoin, it's really hard to guess. But I mean, if I were to make a guess, I would probably go with Bitcoin. And I'm doing that right now. But I'd say it's really hard to say. I think there's too many factors involved for anyone to be like 100% sure about it.
Do you think it's good that a lot of these tech companies are hopping on, like, you know, Square? Or do you think it was better when the community was curating a lot of the technology and it was less a part of typical consumer-facing companies?
I mean, there's a lot of aspects to it. It's not just the consumer side. I'd say what matters more is like organization level adoption, because I think the consumer side is probably the most latter forms of where it's important, because the thing is, Bitcoin also reflects a lot of other important industries. For example, you can have warehouse financing or oil trading on an institutional level. And pretty much every country out there has some form of reserves. Most of them are gold. And if you have a digital form of gold, that even if you replace, like, let's say 30% of that market, I think that's pretty substantial compared to pure consumer adoption first, which will happen. It just takes some time because the technology is more in a adolescent phase. It's the costs are going down in terms of transaction but it still needs some scaling before it can get to the individual level, especially where there's a lot of people that are underbanked or unbanked. It's going to take some time to get there.
Yeah, so that was a great lead-in for my next question. Do you think banks are going to start feeling somewhat threatened by crypto? Do you think governments are going to be more inclined to put out their own currencies, like, you know, Venezuela? Where do you think it's going to lead on a more global scale?
Yeah, I mean, for banks specifically, I think they're kind of more in a five-stage of grief right now, because they first started with a lot of denial. They're like, no, this is not gonna work. And then once they realized that wasn't true, and they got angry about it, and they're like, oh, Bitcoin's a fraud, Bitcoin doesn't is a bubble, you know, stuff like that. A lot of inflammatory comments, and now they're kind of more in a bargaining phase, where Bitcoin's not very interesting, but blockchain technology is. I think that we're kind of in the bargaining phase right now. But with blockchain technology, what matters is really adoption, and just delineating that from cryptocurrency is going to be a lot harder. In terms of Venezuela, they recently got this Petro cryptocurrency. And that was really highly anticipated already. I've actually posted in Quora way back that it would be a lot of the oil trading countries would start using Bitcoin or cryptocurrencies. The problem with Petro is that it's a lot of people don't really trust it that well. So, and Bitcoin is a lot better at reducing the cost of trust. I think it's more of a gateway thing where people would use Petro if they believe it, and if they don't, Bitcoin is a better intermediary. You've also seen like Russia is starting to do a bit of a U-turn, maybe several months ago.
Yeah.
In terms of their attitude towards Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies, they're a lot more friendlier than before. Venezuela also did a U-turn on Bitcoin, so I mean, I think it's only a matter of time in terms of some of the countries which will be a lot more friendlier to Bitcoin, and just in general, for the G20 countries, they're not necessarily against Bitcoin. They're more concerned about certain aspects of it, and they want to preserve the innovation side of things, but they also want to regulate certain aspects So it's more of a balance in terms of innovation and regulation.
Yeah, from what I've seen, it's a lot of worry about anti-money laundering, using it to fund things like terrorism, or, you know, people see it as a means to an end for those things. I know we were approached by someone from the Swiss government when we were at South by Southwest, so I know there are certain countries, especially some that seem to have strong banking ties or they're trying to avoid sanctions, who are moving towards crypto. Do you think the U.S. might be put it a sort of disadvantage if we don't start to make it easier for people to use crypto in the US? Do you think some of these other countries will get ahead of us? I know using blockchain in elections is already starting to happen.
Oh yeah, so this is another prediction question. I'd say it really depends. I think most of the regulators are pretty well informed, relatively speaking, on what the technology can do, and I mean it's pretty clear that they're not banning it. You know, I think it's very unlikely. If they do ban it, they actually put in a huge disadvantage in terms of how the overall global regulatory framework would work out. And there's always going to be more friendly countries and. That want to take on this the extra business, and that's it really depends, because there's so many aspects to this. There's also a lot of different players out there. A lot of them are based in the U.S., but there's also a lot more in Europe and China and pretty much everywhere. So it's really hard to say. Oh, this is definitely going to happen. I'd say it's definitely overall positive, and more competition doesn't necessarily hurt. It really depends what type of competition it is.
Yeah. I know you have a lot of contacts in Asia, and you keep an eye on some of those message boards. So I was wondering how you felt governments like in China, for example, might feel about Bitcoin, or if you feel like their public view is different than a private view. A lot of miners are moving to Canada now. Do you have any thoughts on what's happening there?
So my uncle is he's a legislator in Hong Kong. He knows quite a bit about the fintech side because he drafts the laws for it, and he's also in contact with some people in Beijing, so he does know a few things here and there. Right now, Bitcoin is not banned in China, but they make it really hard for it to be traded or used, and they're trying to gradually phase it out right now. At least it seems like that way in terms of the regulatory side, but they don't want to necessarily do an outright ban right away. They're pretty accommodative in terms of their own people for their businesses, and even the exchanges were slowly phased out. They weren't like we're not gonna tell you first before we ban it, kind of thing. So there's a lot of exchanges that moved out of China, and they already had plans regarding that, and a lot of them are moving to Canada, like you said. So there's going to be a lot more opportunities there. Also in the U.S., there's Washington State, which is both of which are using hydroelectric. Costs are a lot lower, so in terms of electricity, so it's a pretty favorable place right now. That's pretty much it overall. Yeah. Was there anything specific you wanted to ask, or?
No, I think it's just it's interesting to hear, because I think a lot of people don't know much about what's happening in China, and we don't get a lot of information over here, so it's interesting to hear someone's perspective about that. But I think it's also interesting, there's so much money pouring into the industry that it's spurring a lot of economic growth, wherever these companies are moving. I know a lot of ICOs are in Gibraltar, there's not much there. I've been there. It's a rock in the Mediterranean, essentially. So maybe you could touch on sort of the ICO process and launching an ICO maybe in the US versus somewhere else.
So for the ICOs in the US right now, it's a little bit harder for me to give you any legal advice in terms of starting one, because a lot of them are more seemingly considered securities. So in terms of that, your best bet would probably be registering as a security with the SEC. And this makes a lot of more difficulties, because you have to comply with a lot of laws and stuff. It's definitely possible to not register if you have really good legal resources to advise you on that, and that's also hard too. I know some people that do that, but I just can't give specific legal advice because I'm not a lawyer.
Yeah, of course.
in terms of outside the U.S., there's a lot of places that are pretty much a free for all. You don't really have to worry about regulation that much, unless you have U.S. accredited investors involved. That does complicate a few things. But there's a lot of ways around that. It really depends on how you do it. And again, that really goes back to your legal advice. And you'd have to find a lawyer for that. If you're dealing with U.S. investors, if you're not dealing with U.S. investors, there's so many places. It's really hard to list all of them. I think that's what makes it very diverse in terms of what can be done, because there's a lot more freedom with different decisions involved and where your location is. In terms of the general process of doing an ICO, it's pretty straightforward. If you have someone to look over the code, you could probably do it in less than a day. But actually marketing it is the bottleneck, because you do want to make sure you have people that can see your ICO, and they also understand the vision. They believe in that vision, and that does take some time, just because there's not as many marketing outlets as before. Google and Facebook have both banned cryptocurrency ads. There's ways around it, but I mean, it kind of defeats the purpose, unless you have something that's really specific in mind. In terms of general marketing strategy, I'm thinking the best way is really getting the PR right now, or if you already have a network of people to market to, that's also another way. Or if you know some people that are very interested in terms of like, if you have really big name VCs, that definitely helps. V Chain is one. They had. Let me think. Who is that guy's name? Anyways, I'll probably remember it later.
Yeah.
If you have a big name VC, or you have, if you have like any sort of PR, it definitely helps. Oh, I remember the name. It was Jim Breyer. But anyways,
okay.
Yeah. That the marketing strategy really is important. Making sure you comply with all the legal stuff is pretty important, especially if you have U.S. investors. And also making sure you have the security down is important too, because if you have any sort of frozen funds or anything, people are going to be really, really unhappy. Or if you have any hacks. And there's also, in terms of the community, that's pretty important, because you do want to have a lot of engagement in terms of how popular that the coin is, and what type of functions it might have. Especially if you already have a prototype, that would be ideal. Although it really that's not always the case. That's generally how I would say ICOs are structured. There's a lot of ways to do it, and there's so many different types of coins that I'm not going to list all of them, but there's so many ways to do it, definitely.
So when you get contacted for consulting projects, what are the questions they typically ask or the things they want to know?
This really depends on the client. I'm more of a really client-focused consultant because I think that's really, really where you add the value in terms of consulting, because it's not necessarily easy to visualize it in terms of the advantages until you understand it from the client's view. And I've gotten so many different clients. Some are for mining, some were for the hedge funds. Some of them were like for example, the blockchain ETF. And there's also a lot of other people that wanted to start exchanges, or they were doing something totally different in terms of cryptocurrencies go. So it's really hard to say exactly like a really standardized process, but I'd say it always starts with what the client is looking for, and go from there. I think it's in general, most of them aren't really familiar with the market, and they don't know enough about the market data to make a good decision, and that's where I add most of the value in terms of the market or understanding the tech.
Okay, so we can shift a little bit maybe more into trading and exchanges. So I know you've been trading for at least 5 years. What are some general strategies you employ, or at the beginning of the day or the beginning of the week, what are you typically looking at to make those decisions?
Well, I haven't traded for quite a while, just because there's been quite a bit of shift in the market. Most of my portfolio is Bitcoin right now, besides a very small amount that I use for other purposes. And I've also done a lot of arbitrage throughout these 5 years. So that's a wholly different type of strategy, and it keeps changing. So it's not really easy to generalize it, because beliefs also change, and you have to adjust according to the markets. Early on, it was mostly figuring out what portion to put into mining from Bitcoin. As there were more altcoins out, there were a lot of different decisions you had to make. But most of them were based on what people were using and how many transactions were there, how the community was, because, the community obviously is important in terms of adoption. And there was a lot of hype as well, but you have to really see through the hype if you wanna have like really good returns consistently, and it's really hard to do that with a lot of the speculation going on. So I explain a lot of my trading strategies and every single trade I make on my Quora blog, so that anyone can read any specifics and the details regarding each trade. Right now, it's just so hard to do much in terms of other altcoins besides Bitcoin right now, because there's a lot of regulatory uncertainties involved, and a lot of it is converging towards certain coins, and it's really hard to do any trading decisions without really understanding the market and doing a lot of research on the market. So in terms of specific altcoins, I'm not going to really touch on that. Mm-hmm. In terms of arbitrage, this really depends on who you know, how your network is set up, and how your banking is set up too. Because if you don't have access to banking, then you're not going to be able to do a lot of the easy arbitrage opportunities. The harder ones are going to involve a lot of more statistical models, and often that's going to depend on how much programming experience you have, or any modeling experience you have, and that ends up being really individual in terms of whether you can execute that or not. So I'd say the easiest way would be if you know anyone in South Korea or Japan, that might be one way to do it. But you'd really have to trust that person in terms of the least amount of resistance for trading strategies going forth. But yeah, there's so many ways to do it. And I wouldn't say I know every single way, but I think mine have been working so far. So
yeah.
Yeah.
So as far as, you know, if you're investing in a stock, you want to dive into the financials and the product, essentially, or the underlying technology. What coins do you think have the better technology or the technology with the most utility? Are there any differentiating factors that you think will make certain coins strong going forward or have made them strong to this point?
This also ends up being a really hard to answer prediction question, just because it involves a lot of global macros and a lot of law, cybersecurity, understanding the technology, and adoption is important. I'd say there's so many things that can happen that it's really hard to even compare it to stocks, because for stocks, there's not necessarily a full disclosure on every single thing, but there's a required disclosure by law, and you have something to go by in terms of traditional cash flow models. But for cryptocurrencies, it's a little bit different, because you're not exactly dealing with a company per se in terms of owning equity. It really depends on the token. If it's an asset-based token, then you're basing it on what the underlying asset is and the counterparty risk. If you're talking about specific utility tokens, it depends on how much that token would be worth when they complete the platform, and the risks involved with actually executing and getting there. So that's a lot of there's a lot of unknowns usually, and it really depends on what type of tokens there you're talking about, but that's where I'd start with.
So have you noticed a lot of more institutional money coming into the market, a lot of bigger portfolios? People always talk about the whales who kind of move the market. Do you think there are, you know, more whales out there or less whales because more individuals are getting into the market?
In terms of whales, it's really hard to say, because a lot of times these whales aren't always visible. There are some, the ones that are visible, there's a lot of billionaires that are already in Bitcoin, and most of them are consolidating in Bitcoin. I think I've mentioned Jim Breyer is in VeChain. So there's some VCs that are looking into specific coins. Mark Cuban also looks into some specific coins. But pretty much across the board, I'd say Bitcoin is really concentrated in terms of institutional investors and billionaires. It's not as I think it was over 200 hedge funds right now that are in cryptocurrencies, and there's quite a few that are in blockchain technology type of companies as well. A lot of companies, even public ones, have shifted towards a mining type of strategy, so that there's that too. It really depends on what on what type of institutional investors you're talking about. But I think generally speaking, that the big investors are there. It's not as widespread as some people are hoping. but it's definitely catching on. And it's really hard to say how far it will catch on or how soon it will catch on. There are some there already, you know.
So for the ones that are investing more specifically in blockchain, do you think there are certain industries, in your opinion, where, you know, it's going to be most applicable, or places where you think it would be best utilized?
Yeah. So that depends on so many things. Do you have any more specific?
Yeah. So yeah. I mean, you're in med school right now. So what about, you know, the healthcare sector? Is there anything you can think about that might be improved with blockchain?
Yeah. So the most direct way would probably be the pharmaceutical supply chain. There's a lot of fake drugs out there. A lot of fake prescriptions. That sort of stuff. So the blockchain would definitely help in that regards. There's also a lot of problems in terms of population health. So if you wanna get certain data in terms of patients, there's a lot of compliance issues in terms of security. In fact, healthcare data is sometimes sold even more than credit card data in the deep web. So the security aspect is pretty important, and I can see some applications there where it's too expensive to do anything besides the blockchain. But it really depends on the specific use case and also adoption, because you're not going to get anywhere without any of these companies using any of the products that you make.
Yeah, and as far as counterfeit drugs, you know, just counterfeiting in general, I think is a really big space. A lot of goods flooding in from China that make it fairly easy. So putting things like that on a blockchain could save some of these countries. I think it's a several $1 trillion a year industry that they're cutting out of a lot of luxury designers and manufacturers.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So more generally, what other sorts of investments do you tend to lean towards other than crypto, and where do you see there being some opportunity?
I mean, this is a pretty broad question, but I'll just say it in general terms. Right now, I also invest in low-end real estate, and it's pretty leveraged, so it beats a lot of the problems associated with inflation. That's one way to go. And the nice thing is my tenants are managing the property themselves through a rent-to-own option, so that it also aligns a lot of the incentives involved, where I don't have to spend as much time managing it. But it really depends on who you trust. So that this is not a strategy that works for every single person out there. And there's some other stuff I also invest in, equity. If you're not gonna be diluted too much, because if you end up being diluted a lot, you're not gonna make that much, and the risks are pretty high. There's also a certain really small micro businesses like apps or websites that have recurring revenue. If I can find any that are fairly passive and they're not selling at a crazy high price and will probably continue to make that the sort of revenue that they're making right now, then I usually go for those. And there's also some individual stocks I do look at that are mostly biotech, small cap. They've already know a lot of the clinical trial regulations involved, especially like CAR therapies. There are some new cancer drugs that are based on the immune system. I'm not going to bore you with too much of the details, but
no, I enjoy this stuff.
Yeah, but yeah, that's the general idea. Is if you see any outsized opportunities where the probability, even if the probability is small, but the chance of it going to a really high return rate, that's usually where I start looking at. But you also have to look at the downside risks involved, because I mean, if you lose your investment, then that's also pretty risky. So some things are where the downside risk is really low, but the upside risk is really high, but the chance is really low. That's a lot of stuff I look at as well. And there's also a lot of things in terms of I hold a lot of cash, because there's a lot of opportunities out there that where if you don't have enough cash, you're not going to be able to take advantage of. And that's really important for certain industries. It really depends on the specific investor and what their goals are. So that's really more of a personal question that doesn't have a really easy answer. But I think that's in general, that's how I invest right now.
So what would you say the best investment you've ever made is, in your opinion?
The best investment? That's really hard to measure, because...
I know you have a lot of them.
I have a lot of them, yes. a lot of them. This really depends on how you measure risk, how you benchmark it. I'd say Bitcoin was probably my best investment so far in terms of Sharpe ratio. So that's probably one way to measure it. But I think, frankly, pretty much all my investments so far have been pretty good investments. The ones that didn't work out didn't really give me that much downside. So I wouldn't really say it's kind of part of the process, you know. Sometimes things don't work out exactly how you think they are, but you always put your best guess and size your bets accordingly, because there's a mathematical formula you can use based on Kelly criterion to figure out how much you should size your investments, and you just have to bet accordingly if you're basing it on that. Or if you really have no idea, probably the easiest way to save your time is just to do low cost index funds. But that really depends on what your goals are, because if you're aiming for like 4 to 7% per year, that might not be some people's goals. For some people, that's perfectly fine, especially if they want to retire and they're already in their 40s or 50s.
Yeah, you gotta definitely tailor the investment to the person. It's important, I think, to have sort of a high threshold for risk right now in crypto still. And a lot of these exchanges, something we've talked about before, you know, they're making a lot of money on margin calls and things like that. Are there any tips you could give to people as far as, you know, best practices for using these exchanges, maybe any strategies for lending? I think lending may not be something a lot of people understand. And then, you know, margin trading and how that works from a back end, you know, having built an exchange yourself, you probably know a little bit more about how that works.
Yeah, that's a really good question. There's a lot of margin lending out there. And that's one way to make some income, but the rewards have gone down a little bit. It really depends where you are, and you also have to evaluate exchanges in terms of the counterparty risk. So right now, Bitfinex is one of those exchanges that offers a really high interest, but they don't necessarily have the best reputation, and there is some significant counterparty risks involved, so it might not be the best, even though the returns are pretty good. And in terms of just general security-wise, you probably want to have either a hardware wallet or have your own software to hold the wallet with best security practices, and just move anything that you want to trade right away into exchanges, or you could wait for the centralized exchanges to take off. But that's, you have to be really careful. People have lost money before just on really silly mistakes, just because they didn't really evaluate counterparty risk that much. In terms of the back end and how the exchanges work, that's that really depends on what you're asking for. There's a lot more to scale in the back end, and it's it really depends on which aspects you're looking at. In terms of general traders, they don't really need to know too much about the back end, unless they want to understand more in terms of how the markets may move, specifically when exchanges have specific news coming out. That might be one aspect, but it takes a, it's a really big learning curve, so I'm not sure it's worth it for every single person out there. Yeah,
sure. So there's been a lot of buzz about decentralized exchanges. I think Binance just put out a competition with $1 million reward. What do you think you would tell people about the major differences between centralized and decentralized exchanges?
I think for decentralized exchanges, they do have some benefits in terms of they won't be shut down, for one, easily. And there's a lot more security measures involved that you can do. So you don't have to worry about counterparty risk as much. There's also some downsides to it, because there can be spoofed orders, which there are in the centralized exchanges, but it can actually affect your trades a lot more. And there's also possible liquidity problems that you might have in the early days, once the decentralized exchanges come out widespread and also with lots of options. Right now, the options aren't very many, but the trade-offs are there. Centralized exchanges generally have a lot more standards in terms of what they list and what they don't, for the bigger exchanges. The smaller ones don't have as much. So if you're kind of just looking for a curated list, it might be great for you to look into what centralized exchanges lists, and maybe it might be worth it for some aspects in terms of liquidity. But this really depends on what you're trading, what your strategy is. Ultimately, the decentralized exchanges are better in terms of security, but there are some trade-offs right now, and it's not a clear-cut winner right now. But decentralized exchanges, once they scale, it's very likely to be the clear-cut winner in the future.
So do you think companies like Goldman or other ones who are trying to buy off some of the established exchanges, do you think they're going to get threatened by decentralized exchanges when that happens?
There's several aspects to this. For one, I think the competition is always going to be there, whether you decentralize it or not. So it's not necessarily something that's decentralized versus centralized. There's a huge market for exchanges in the first place. Mm-hmm. The second thing is they're not necessarily mutually exclusive. They cannot coexist. There's some benefits for centralized exchanges versus decentralized exchanges, as I mentioned before. So there's a reason why Binance is doing both right now. Uh-huh. Just because there's a lot of advantages to each side, so that's the. It's more likely to be both of them to exist, and there's just more freedom of choice, more freedom of investments in terms of decentralized exchanges. And with those type of freedoms, you also have to have some trade-offs.
Okay. So sort of the last topic I wanted to touch upon, talking about mining, do you think there's going to be a future of more mineable coins and limited supply, or do you think we're moving more towards a proof of stake model, and some of the major players are going to start moving over? Because, I mean, in my opinion, it seems like mining has worked fairly well up to this point. The incentives seem to be aligned. But, I mean, you know more about the technology itself and the economics, so I was just curious what you think about the future of mining.
Well, there's some advantages to using proof of stake compared to just using mining. So there's a lot of different ways you can do it. Proof of work is the most common for mining, and there. The difference is how the incentives are. So in terms of proof of work, where we have miners involved, you have the transaction fees given to the miners. And that can be expensive for some things, but it can also proof of stake also has some other benefits in terms of in terms of costs, but that really depends on how you scale. For example, for Bitcoin, they're still using proof of work, but they have some second layer scaling in terms of SegWit, and also there's also more recently the Lightning Network. So that definitely reduces the costs significantly, and that's where it's really hard to say, oh, this is definitely much better. It really depends on what type of incentives you're offering, what type of coin it is.
But could you briefly explain why SegWit and Lightning would reduce costs?
The way Lightning Network works is you have all these channels out on top of the regular blockchain that they're considered off-chain solutions. So if you have these channels involved, you can bunch them up together as one transaction. That makes it much more cost effective, because you now have it now costs like a fraction of what a transaction costs. So that's one way to scale for Bitcoin. That's the most important type of development so far in terms of Bitcoin. Was there anything specific you wanted to ask?
No, I think that clears it up for people. I think a lot of these splits, you know, people hear about them and don't really understand what they actually mean, what they do, why they're being done. So it's good to give people a little background. But with that, that was all the questions I had for you. I don't know if there's anything else you feel like you wanted to add. I'm going to put the link to CryptoSignal in the description. And with that, if there's anything else.
No, that's all. Thank you for having me. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for being here. I know you're crazy busy. You got boards coming up, so I really appreciate it. And have a good night. And thank you all for listening.
Yeah, thank you guys.